Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Roz Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Welcome to Living Life Powerfully, and thank you for tuning in as we talk about passion. We began talking about it last week, and we are continuing. So I just want to ask you, what does that word passion, what does it conjure up in your mind or your body? How does it make you feel? You know, for me, I think of my soul just being stirred. I think of excitement, vision, anticipation, and some sort of action, just to name a few things. So today, we're going to talk about emotional intelligence and its relationship to passion. So what is emotional intelligence? Well, the simplest definition is the ability to make healthy choices based on accurately identifying, understanding, and managing your own feelings / emotions and the feelings of others. Now, the lack of emotional intelligence may become an obstacle to keeping our passion alive. So it is crucial that we increase our emotional intelligence. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Passion, though a bad regulator, is a powerful spring." So we don't want to lose that momentum that we get from passion. And one of the things that we have to consider are our emotions. Perletta?
Hey, Raj. Well, one of the simplest ways for me to understand the idea of what emotion is and how it impacts me is to see emotion as energy in motion. Energy in motion. So when we are emotional, it just means that there's some energy that's behind the emotion that we're probably going to take. So we have the power to direct our emotion or our energy in a positive or negative way. So when you mentioned the passion for a bad regulator is a powerful spring, that's true, because the power of passion is evident when we aren't constructive, right, as a bad regulator. It's evident when we're not constructive and intentional in how we direct it. So when people go off, you know, like someone is triggered and they go off, that means that obviously that there's energy in motion and they're not being constructive or intentional. They've lost it. They've blown the gasket. And we can look to what's happening across the country with the riots against police brutality as an example of how people lash out in destructive ways when they go off, when there's this emotion and this energy that's tied together, right? And emotions have been flying high and back and forth without much self-regulation. And people are outraged about the killings, right, of Mike Brown and Tamir Rice and most recently Freddie Gray, with good reason. So there's energy behind it, right? There's outrage. But then the outrage of humanity, man's inhumanity to man is completely understandable, but it's what happens when people don't understand what's actually occurring in themselves that creates issues. So there's passion around it. People are angry at the police, angry at racism, angry at the rioters, angry at the political leaders. They're angry at the social and political and economic system. And then there's this reaction, because they're triggered, is a reaction to all of that anger, which has fueled then more anger. So there's plenty of passion and emotions which are running high and amok, because there's very little awareness of what's happening at a deeper level, which is why emotional intelligence, or which is where emotional intelligence can be helpful.
So what is an emotion? Well, an emotion is just a mental state that arises spontaneously rather than through conscious effort, and it is often accompanied by physiological changes. So everything that we do, see, feel spontaneously creates an emotion. Only the intense ones, though, are the ones that we notice. Those are the ones that get our attention.
And why is that so? it's so important for us to have an awareness of our emotions because it happens at this unconscious level. What you're talking about, Raj, is telling us more about why developing emotional intelligence would help us in developing our own sense of ourselves.
And so basically, it's pretty simple, actually. It just sounds like a big word. It basically consists of four major domains. The first one being self-awareness, knowing what we are feeling and why we're feeling it. It's the basis of good decision-making and intuition, and it's also our moral compass. The second part is self-management. Now that we're aware, how do we handle our distressing emotions so that they're effective, like Perletta said, so that it's channeled in the right direction, so they don't cripple us, they don't get in the way of what we are doing, and yet attuning to them so that we can learn what we need to. Every emotion has a function. So what we're doing is we're marshaling the positive emotions, getting ourselves involved and enthused about what we are doing and getting our actions aligned with our passions. Third is very important, and that is empathy, knowing what someone else is feeling, kind of like, you know, being able to walk a mile in their shoes. And the last but not least is social skills, or the skilled relationship with others. So when we think of, you know, our IQ, our intelligence quotient, you know, we can see that that's been improving as we get more sophisticated cognitive systems in place. But if we think of our emotional intelligence, our emotional quotient, it needs to be addressed. Just look at the different wars and the familial patterns of society, abuse, what Perletta was just talking about, all the unrest. You know, this reveals the emotions gone out of control. And there have been research studies done that say that women seem to be better at empathy and social skills, but men seem to be better at self-confidence and managing distressing emotions. Now, if you go and look at the top 10% of leaders, there is no difference between the men and women on any of these four scales. So that is very interesting to me, because it's like, okay, maybe we all are leaders if we look at ourselves that way and behave in that way as well.
There's also a very practical way, I think, to look at it. I mean, you mentioned four skill sets or four major domains, but self-awareness, self-management, empathy, and social skills, or how we relate to others. And I think about it in my own personal life when I'm agitated, when I allow myself to get agitated by something, like in a one-on-one relationship, my daughter does something to agitate me. Normally I focus, and even in the wording I just used, she's agitating me, right? So there's no self-awareness or self-management taking place when I do that. And when I look at it from the perspective of she's agitating me, then there's very little room for me to be empathetic with her because I'm blaming her. It's her fault that I'm agitated. And I think that's incredibly powerful as a tool when we have emotion, is to stop blaming the other person for our emotion, but to look at, why am I agitated, right? So, because when I blame her, there's no opportunities for her and I to develop a closer relationship. I'm blaming her, and she's probably looking at me like, why are you upset with me? You know, how many times have we had a disagreement with someone and they're looking at us like, I didn't do anything to you. It happens all the time in our interpersonal relationships. And so the reality is that, at least as we understand it, when we focus on developing emotional intelligence, if we want to grow, we stop blaming others for our emotions. Ever have a conversation about what you did to me, or if we do, we correct ourselves, because instead of pointing the finger at someone else, we ask ourselves, what am I feeling about what is happening right now? What am I feeling about, why am I so angry that someone did fill in the blank? And if I am angry, how could I better manage my anger so as not to lash out at someone else? And when you do this, not only do you develop a deeper connection or self-awareness with yourself, you'll be better able to manage yourself, because then you're in this constant development of your awareness of yourself, and then you can be more constructive with what you choose to do afterwards as opposed to just reacting. Because you ask yourself, what can I do to make a positive difference here, as opposed to just reacting automatically, which we sometimes do.
You know, the first tip-off that we may need to boost our emotional intelligence is I can question myself, do I keep repeating the same interpersonal disaster? Like, for example, you know, ask yourself, do you keep going out with the same type of guys, or do you keep getting fired from jobs? Yale University has done a lot of amazing work with emotional intelligence, and they've devised an acronym, which I think is very helpful, and it's RULER, R-U-L-E-R. And so R stands for recognizing emotions in self and others by interpreting facial expressions, body language, vocal tones, and physiology. And then the U is understanding our emotions are constantly impacting our thinking and judgment. So we want to understand the causes and consequences of these emotions. And one thing to remember is that all emotions are valid and they're important. It is what you do with them that matters. I know we keep repeating that, but that's basically a point that we never want to forget. So if we are angry and injustice, convert it into passion and do something about it. And then the L stands for labeling emotions accurately. So build your vocabulary in order to label the emotions. For example, people interchangeably use jealousy and envy, and it's very different. You know, just look it up. You know, jealousy has more to do with relationships. Envy is more about objects. Now, E, expressing emotions appropriately, that's huge. And yep. Sometimes we think that we know how to do that, and we really don't, especially when we look at our life. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. And then
Rush,
R stands for,
sometimes I see this most poignantly when people yell at their kids in public, or they, I saw it actually yesterday. I was out, and a child ran away from the parent, and the parent went and grabbed the kid and twisted his ear and was like, "Don't you run away from me."
Yeah.
And I was, you know, just observing that, I was like, wow, clearly, at least from my perspective, that parent was angry at the child, right? And was blaming them for whatever it was that was happening in that moment. And how the emotion was expressed was rage, right?
Yeah.
It was very powerful to see because you never know when something like that happens, what the person receiving that is making it mean. That's what I went through. What is that child getting from that lesson, quote unquote, that the parent is trying to teach him? Is he getting that anger is okay, you know, that I shouldn't make my father, because it was his father, upset? I mean, you just never know. But in that moment, it seemed to me that it was just way off the charts in terms of what the child did with how the father responded.
Yeah, very, very good point. And, you know, it's so painful to see that, isn't it? There's nothing more heart-wrenching than to see a little innocent child being treated like that, because the adult doesn't know how they should show the emotion. And then, well, it brings us to the last R in RULER, which is regulating emotions. We need to have strategies in place. So what immediately comes to mind when we think of regulating emotions? It's like stress management or anger management. I'll have clients calling me, I need an anger management class for my husband, or I need a stress management class. But I'm speaking about something very different. Imagine if we had courses offered on happiness maintenance or optimism maintenance. You know, this has given me some very good ideas. So instead of thinking of preventing or reducing the negative emotions, because they are going to come up. I mean, it's just natural.
Absolutely.
We live in the world. But what we can focus on is learning how to initiate emotions that may serve us in achieving a goal. We need to be able to be inspired as well as to inspire others. This cannot happen by simply reducing or preventing stress and anger. If we look at our contemporary artists, it was sadness that inspired them to do their amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
So how, you know, how do we regulate our emotions? Did you want to say something, Perletta?
Yeah, I was going to say that you're raising a very good point, which is there are no good or bad emotions, right? And sometimes people do think of anger or hostility or frustration or sadness as being bad. And they're not bad. And the reality is, as you indicated, we all have them. So it's not the absence of them that makes us better people. It's our being aware of them. It's our making constructive choices when we have them so that we're not lashing out at others and creating havoc in the world or in our relationship. So in the example that you used with the contemporary artist, that person was able to use the sadness to inspire them. We can actually use our emotions, be it anger or sadness, in a constructive way that contributes to ourselves and others. That's what we're talking about.
Yes. And so how do we regulate our emotions? So let's just think of it this way, okay? The first thing is something has to happen. So we have a trigger, and we need to be aware of our triggers. Now we can use our breath to activate the parasympathetic nervous system. So what does that mean? So if we are triggered, now an emotion has taken a hold of us, so we can use our breath to get our control back, because deep breathing helps us bring it down. It helps us bring the emotion down so that our prefrontal cortex can help us with the problem solving and for us to take more appropriate and effective action. And then another very powerful tool here is envisioning your best self by shifting your mindset. So what does that mean? You need to, like, really sit back and think about yourself. Who are you at your best when you feel so much in harmony, when you're helping others, when you're helping yourself, when you're being good to yourself? That's your best self. Now we can strategize for effective problem solving once we can envision our best self in whatever situation we're caught in. And this way we can solve the problem at hand instead of running off and start twisting our children's ears and, you know, yelling at them and all those ineffective things that we do.
It's also important to look at our emotions as either positive or negative. And I use this tool myself. When I think of negative emotions, again, negative, it doesn't mean bad emotions. It just means that I look at it from the perspective that I'm attempting to exclude something because of the underlying emotion. So I may want to exclude fear, or exclude apathy, or I may not want to grieve, or some other negative emotions might be hatred or shame, blame, regret. There's a huge list, like there is a positive emotion, resentment and frustration. So we are seeing a ton of negative emotion taking place right now in Baltimore, right? You can tell because people are lashing out and destroying their community, and they're reacting from anger, hatred, and hostility, like we just talked about. On the other hand, positive emotion, which would be interest or enthusiasm, laughter, empathy, love, we tend to want to include something. So we want to look at the whole, and we want to interact with people. It's an expansion when we have positive emotions. They are fueled by this underlying desire for enjoyment and unity. One of I think the second point that you talked about, Raj, is beyond the self-awareness is self-management. So when we're managing ourselves, if we look at it, are we experiencing something that occurs as a positive or negative emotion, it can help us to not only engage with ourselves differently, but engage in the world differently, because we're watching whether it occurs for us as positive or negative.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, Daniel J. Borstein says, the greatest obstacle to discovery is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. It is not that we don't know that keeps us from growing and learning. It's that we think we know and we close our mind to what's possible. So human beings have a need to know. And when we feel we don't know, we get scared. We go into the fear mode. And the way we get secure again is to create a story. And then we build a bridge to take us from the edge of not knowing to a place of security in knowing again. But in this process, there is very little attention given to ourselves or to others. We are now at the mercy of our self-devised perceptions. So it is our own perceptions that help us to justify our becoming the judge and the jury. This self-awareness will open up a new way of breaking through old conditioned perceptions. So the first thing is we've got to know the difference between feelings and actions, okay? All feelings are acceptable, but not all actions. Recognize that others are mirrors for ourselves. And always, always, no matter what emotion we're having, we need to ask, well, what's my role in this? So me and my daughter were having a strong disagreement. And, you know, and right away I got this realization, okay, what is it that I'm doing that's causing this thing to escalate, okay? So as soon as I asked myself that question, something shifted. Something shifted inside of me. Something shifted inside of her. And it just took on a whole new direction. And then there's something called the neurobiology of authenticity. So, you know, we are doing whatever we're doing. We're making up stories in our head. But there's something which is very authentic, and there's a whole new field of research called interpersonal neurobiology. And Danny Siegel out of UCLA describes that humans and mammals, we have resonance circuits in our brain, and they are mirror neurons that pick up subtle nonverbal cues from others. So we will pick up on emotional reactions faster than we can cognitively pick up on these cues. This way, you can pick up someone's nonverbal cues and you can know the incongruence and inconsistency with what they are saying and what they're doing. Does that make sense, Perletta? It's like if, you know, if you walk into a room and, you know, immediately it's like you pick up like, oh, you know, you gravitate towards certain people, right? And it's this mirror neuron system that's really working. You know, it's letting us know, okay, this person is safe. This person is more authentic. This person is not. And so we don't even have to wait. I mean, if we can just kind of bring ourselves down from our high emotion and just sit and just get tuned in, we will know what we need to do. But we have to intervene when things get hot.
Well, this leads to this what I love talking about, which we're gonna have a full session on it next week. But to this idea that our passion or our emotions can be a powerful force to help create or manifest what we want and how we live in the world, right? Ultimately, our emotions are our fuel. Our passion is our fuel. And if we see it like that, like how am I directing my fuel, or the other way of looking at it, we talked about a little earlier, it was our energy. How can I use my passion as my fuel to create? Because truthfully, our passion is a powerful motivating force that can overcome insurmountable circumstances, right, to help us achieve our heart's desire. We can look at people all the time. As a matter of fact, when we hear stories of how people overcame all of these obstacles. It inspires us. Why does it inspire us? It inspires us because there's a connection that you talked about just now. There's a connection that we all feel to this source of what is our own fuel, how we direct it. So there needs to be an acceptance that we each have the power within us to create our world. And when someone else does it, it's an example of what is possible for us too. But our perception, our awareness that you just mentioned, Raj, is at the center of whether we're able to create from our passion and use it as fuel constructively or whether it'll be destructive. So this I am of the conversation, who am I and what am I creating? Am I being responsible for that? Am I looking inward as to developing a deeper connection with myself is central to this process. Because when we're able to connect and become more aware of who we are and how we feel, it can help us live more powerfully, with more passion and more fulfillment. Because when we get in tune with it and experience ourselves at our core, there's beauty there, there's love there, there's living from our authentic true selves there. And that's what we say when we mean living from the inside out. Right? There'll be a greater capacity to develop a connection with yourself and live from your truth, which is love, and then from your emotions from that. So then that from that place, you're better balanced. So using an example that you just gave, Raj, in your relationship with your daughter, you felt yourself escalating. First of all, you were aware and you had the experience of, okay, something's happening here, so that on some level you detached from it for a moment to get some awareness that I'm doing something. It wasn't her fault. I'm doing something to create this situation, and I want to do something to uncreate it. So then you, whatever imbalance that you were experiencing, you brought yourself back to balance in yourself, balancing in your mind, certainly balancing in your body, and I'm sure in your spirit, because you said she felt it. It changed the dynamic. So when we're in the fullness of our beingness, it can inform our action and then cause a completely different response in the world.
So as we can see, emotions do matter.
Sure.
When perceived accurately and regulated effectively, emotions help us to focus on important tasks. They make effective decisions, enjoy healthy relationships, and manage life's ups and downs. Just like a plant needs water, your passion needs to be nurtured a little bit every day in order for it to grow to the point where it becomes obvious to you and to the rest of the world. If we do not possess emotional intelligence, it is only a matter of time before we get hijacked by our emotions or the emotions of others and either give up our passion or have it be seriously compromised.
How do you think that happens, Raj?
Well, when we get emotional, we forget everything. We forget our goals. We forget our purpose. We forget who we are. You know, we forget everything other than our emotion and whatever feelings, strong feelings we're having at the time. So, you know, forget about our passion. We even forget who we are. So that's how we're going to end up, you know, destroying something along that path towards our purpose and using our passion. And we're not going to, you know, it's going to be compromised.
I recently had a conversation with a coaching client, and she said, you know, I don't know what I'm passionate about. She wasn't really present to herself in that way. And I asked her to really just begin the process of reflecting on who I am and what do I love, and to practice, you know, just being in conversation, sitting in silence more, engaging in contemplation, and being open to what comes up. And when we stay connected to and tune into and feed our heart, we're able to better understand and develop a relationship with ourselves so that our passions come true.
Yes, yes, beautiful. So, well, it looks like our time is up. Next week is the third and last part of our series on passion. We are going to pull back the curtain on how to create with passion and power. Discover how you can use your passion, fueled by emotion, to live life more powerfully. Now, feel free to email us at pearlrajradio@gmail.com. That's pearlrajradio@gmail.com. For updates of our shows, make sure to like our Facebook page called Living Life Powerfully. Stay true to yourself and stay empowered. See you next week.